Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Keith Roller will be joining me in just a little bit. We have a great show lined up for you. Starting with our first guest, leading off the program, we invite in on the phone lines Devon Givens from 97.5, the Fanatic talk show host and Sixers and NBA insider. Devon, thanks for joining us on Sports Talk this evening.
Chris, glad to be here. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's our pleasure and glad to have you on and get to your NBA insights and recap the draft. And, of course, the big news for Sixers fans and all across the NBA, the Sixers move up to take that number one spot. Markelle Fultz, the guy who seemed to fit that need and be the best player available. Your thoughts on the Sixers move and how does Markelle Fultz fit with the process moving forward?
It was a great move, Chris, because they identified the player that they wanted while sitting at three for a little over a month and trying to go through different prospects and realizing who could fit best with both Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and Dario Saric in Brett Brown's system. Once they went through all of the things that they needed to in terms of just simply breaking everything down, they decided Markelle Fultz was the best player. They had the ammunition with the picks from other clubs, the Lakers and the Kings, to move up to that number one spot. They identified him, and they went and got him. So for me, Chris, I thought it was a fantastic move.
Yeah, and he also seems to fit well with the direction the Sixers are going and giving Ben Simmons the ball. He's going to be your point guard or point forward or however you want to phrase it. Could you talk about how that's going to work? They haven't played yet together. We haven't seen Ben Simmons running the point in an actual NBA game. But how will those two players coexist? And defensively, who do you think takes the opposing team's point guards on defense? Is that Fultz? Is that Simmons? Or might that be someone else?
Yeah, and it's funny because if you don't mind, Chris, I'll just say right from the start, with those two being in the backcourt together, when you say whether he's the point forward or the point guard or however it is, I just always term him as a basketball player because he's so unique at that size, 6'10", being able to handle the ball the way he is. And defensively, for me, Chris, the way my starting lineup would go, we can get to the rest of the free agents, the additions later, but I have him defending the power forward spot on the other end simply because I believe that the way the NBA has gone, as you well know and as your listeners and your fan base already knows, there are a lot of stretch fours. There's not too many back-to-the-basket power forward four-mans in the NBA anymore, so I don't think that gets Ben Simmons in any trouble. But that being said, the way those two, Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons, work together offensively, as Brett Brown has stated, he's going to have Ben Simmons bring the ball up as if you were taking the ball out, Chris, and inbounding the ball to Ben Simmons. He's going to be the primary ball handler. But as you've seen so many times over the last few years, as soon as the point guard or whoever is their primary ball handler in the NBA, they typically hand the ball off. So there's a lot of movement with the basketball where it's a dribble drive handoff at the top of the key or the same thing from the other side and everything else starts to happen where the pick and roll gets going. So while Ben Simmons is the primary point guard, he's the primary ball handler, I think a lot of the attention and a lot of the responsibility of being another ball handler, the secondary ball handler, if you will go to Markelle Fultz. So I see it working out just fine because Markelle Fultz is more of the scoring mentality type of guard, especially in this particular lineup, this duo that they have with Simmons and Fultz. And for me, while it will take long, you will see a lot of turnovers from two young guards their first time together on an NBA floor. I think whenever they finally get it together, they will flourish big time.
Yeah, Fultz certainly looked good last night in his second summer exhibition game, too. A lot of scoring in that fourth quarter. You know, we're heading towards that age in which we're going to kind of throw out the labels. I think you were seeing that at different levels of basketball where you don't have your typical point guard, shooting guard, three player, and so forth. It's becoming more revolutionary. We're having players who can do a little bit of everything. And speaking of players who can do a little bit of everything, Joel Embiid, you could argue, I guess he's a stretch five with his shooting ability from the outside. But, you know, I think he's still the key to all this. What are your expectations about his injury? Do you think he's going to be able to play a full season or at least most of the season? And how important is he to this overall offense to set up and make Simmons and Fultz and Saric and everybody else better?
Yeah, I think he is the best player, but I tend to put both he and Ben Simmons together as the most important pieces equally. Mm-hmm. Now, I know the injury where we've had Joel Embiid for 2 years, just basically trying to get over that one injury with the foot. That being said, you're right, Chris. He's so dynamic as a stretch four, being able to shoot from the perimeter, back to the basket, face up in the intermediate area where he does a lot of his damage as well. I think I'm trying to be realistic about the whole thing, but I am giving him somewhere in the 70 game range. If he can give the 76 or 70 games, mm-hmm. sometimes they'll give him back to backs. Sometimes they may decide that 3 games in 4 nights just may not be the right thing for him, and their doctors and their coach and their general manager will decide on that. But that being said, Chris, if they can get 70 games out of Joel Embiid, that being a full season, I really like his chances to be really, Chris, the best center in the NBA. With sure. You saw what he did with 20 points and 7 rebounds in under 24 minutes in the 31 games that he played for the 76ers. So if you imagine 70 games and close to 35 minutes max for Joel Embiid and putting up the kind of production that he does offensively and defensively, I'm looking at somewhere in the 25 and 11 kind of game where he also affects the game on a defensive end, where he gives you 2 blocks per game, not to mention the shots that he alters just by being that much of a problem in the paint.
You mentioned the free agents. Sixers already on the first day of free agency signed J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson. Could you talk about those two signings? I know you had floated a couple names out there as far as people that would fit the Sixers' needs right now and also make the team better. Redick, an outside shooter that they've desperately needed for a few years. And Amir Johnson, does he become your starting power forward, or how do you see both of their roles shaping out with the new team?
You're right, Chris. I did throw a lot of names out there simply because Brett Brown and President of Basketball Operations Brian Colangelo stated that they wanted shooters. They wanted to target shooters during the offseason to help out Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and, of course, once they drafted Markelle Fultz, they needed someone to knock down jumpers consistently from the outside, to be that outside threat. And J.J. Redick was one of the names, albeit I wasn't sure if it would happen because I didn't think the Clippers would really break things up. But once Chris Paul left, it really just looked obvious that J.J. Redick was going to be on the move because he was going to get a big deal on the open market. Perfect fit. The 1 year for $23 million was fantastic move by both Redick and Colangelo to put that deal together. And with what he did, 15 points per game, 6 three-point attempts, 11 field goal attempts overall in 28 minutes for the Los Angeles Clippers, Chris, he starts the game off really well for the Los Angeles Clippers. He sets the tone, if you will, for that team. He averages 5 points in the first quarter. He does a lot of his damage as well in the third. So he's that kind of tone setter for the game and after halftime. And I see it similar way for the 76ers, where he'll be that guy that they want to start running early to get things open to allow Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz to do their work, find opportunities for J.J. Redick to get shots, and then once he starts knocking them down, the ability for those two to also score. And then, of course, when Joel Embiid in the first quarter starts to get doubled because he makes a few baskets, who does he have to kick the ball out to? One of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. So fantastic move by the Sixers acquiring J.J. Redick on the one-year deal, giving themselves flexibility, not only this year, but the entire year to evaluate him and for him to also evaluate the 76ers. Now, in terms of Amir Johnson, the 1 year, $11 million, another good deal. Another veteran to come into this locker room with so many young personalities to try to help and mold and teach those young guys how to be professionals. That also being said, to also give 10 to 12 minutes a game to spell Joel Embiid, to teach Rashawn Holmes while they're on the bench starting mm-hmm. together. So I thought that was another move. And just in terms of my starting five, I do not have Amir Johnson in my five because of, again, the way the four position now is with him being a power forward, the stretch four, I don't think that's his best for him to be defending those kind of players to start the game. So for me, Chris, if you don't mind, J.J. Redick, Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons, Robert Covington, and Joel Embiid. So while that sounds a little strange, the only one who's really out of position is Ben Simmons because he's that unique guy where I just, again, call him a basketball player because he can do so many different things. So offensively, I'll still have Redick and Fultz to do the things that they do while also have Robert Covington more as someone who can not necessarily just stand around the three-point line but also be in motion and whatever action Brett Brown decides to call to find his spot to knock down that three-point shot. Mm-hmm. And on defense, it's status quo. The point guard will be Markelle Fultz. defensively for the shooting guard, Redick, small forward, Covington, and as I mentioned earlier, I'll have Ben Simmons chasing around those stretch fours, and Joel Embiid, obviously, the center position for the 76ers.
That sounds good. I really like Robert Covington, what he did. And I think moving forward, he can still be part of this team because of his hustle and his defense. And another player that you didn't mention in that mix, Dario Saric, had a great second half of the year. But I know listening to your show, you've been adamant that you don't think he's a starter long term. And he's very valuable as a sixth or seventh guy, first couple guys off the bench. Do you see him developing into a regular player? Or what do you think his role could be long term? Or do the Sixers have to maybe not this offseason anymore, but next year look at a quote-unquote four guy or someone else to start at that four position?
Yeah, see, I like Dario Saric, again, as you said, as a sixth man, because I think his role is just as valuable as the starting five that the Sixers will put on there to start the game at tip. And I say that because while I mentioned that I like him to be a sixth man, that's no knock on him. The sixth man is very important on an NBA team, especially when you're a very good NBA team. So Dario Saric, for me, is going to play 25 to 30 minutes a game. And there are going to be times where he's going to close the game as well with that final five on the floor. My thing for Dario Saric is with what he does, which is kind of similar to what Ben Simmons does, I love for him to sort of man that second unit, to be the leader of that second unit, to display all the skills that he has, similar again to what Ben Simmons has, as those second unit guys start to come off the floor. Now, again, he's going to play with a lot of those starters because he's that good. He's more than capable of keeping up. You saw that once Joel Embiid went down for the remainder of the year last year and Nerlens Noel was shipped to Dallas via trade. So there's no knock on Dario Saric. I think he's a fine player. I underestimated his skill set when they drafted him. I was totally wrong, and I think he was the right pick for them. Mm-hmm. For this particular team, as it's built, and with them needing the stretch ability on the floor to shoot, while he did show improvement, it's not there yet in terms of knocking down the three-point shot from a decent percentage. So for me, again, Chris, I just simply like him. I love him as the sixth man to be the leader of that second unit, split some time with the starters, but also, again, when he and Jared Bayless and Amir Johnson and Rashawn Holmes, those types of players come off the bench, I love him being a leader of that second unit.
Our special guest to lead off the show, Devon Givens, a talk show host and Sixers insider on 97.5 The Fanatic and 97.5thefanatic.com. I wanted to ask you about some of the other players, the second half of the roster, because there's probably going to be a lot of competition and maybe some tough decisions that will have to be made for the opening day roster. Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrol, Forcraz, and other players whose names I probably won't be able to pronounce on any kind of regular basis, they're all going to be fighting for playing positions, and I know a few can go in the D-League, you know, a few you can hide somewhere, but which players of the more notable names, which ones don't you think will be on the opening day roster come this fall?
It looks like with what they have right now, the 15, the only two candidates that I would really look at and say they are maybe in jeopardy would be Justin Anderson and Nick Stauskas. Justin Anderson, again, he was acquired in the Nerlens Noel deal. While I love his intensity, his defense, everything athletically that he gives you, you need those athletic wings to defend in today's NBA. So I hope he's not a casualty of just, you know, numbers game, numbers crunching, and he doesn't make it, because I think you need that kind of player. And Nick Stauskas, again, once you bring in J.J. Redick, and as you just mentioned, Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrol, the second-year guard, so many people in the 76ers are high on him. Mm-hmm. That being said, when it comes to Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrol, while he did look good at the end of the year, showing some glimpses of why he was selected 24th overall, I think he will spend some time in the D-League with the Delaware 87ers, because what the 76ers normally want, like they did last year with him when they did send him down to the Delaware 87ers, was they want him to get some floor time, to get some practice time, to get some reps in, and he knows the system, but you just need quality minutes. And when you are in the NBA, there's not a lot of practice time. So for him, and as you just mentioned, Furkan Korkmaz, who they just got, he was the 26th overall pick last year, right behind Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrol, and he stayed overseas in Turkey and played for the Turkish club. He's coming over now. He signed his contract to play for the 76ers in 17-18. He's also, in my opinion, a candidate to join Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrol quite a bit in the D-League while he gets that practice time, gets some minutes in actual and real game action. Now, they'll go up and down. They'll be with the Sevens. They'll be with the 76ers. But for me, while they will be on the roster, I think they do spend a lot of time in the now G League.
Devon, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thoughts on some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference. Boston obviously made the deal. They pick up a great player in Tatum and looking to sign Gordon Hayward, too, which would be a huge addition. So they're going to be loaded for years to come. Washington's trying to re-sign Otto Porter, and they just re-signed John Wall, or signed him to an extension, I should say. And the Knicks, I guess they made a big addition by getting rid of Phil Jackson. So your thoughts on how the Eastern Conference is shaping up with their offseason moves?
Yeah, the Atlantic Division in general, as you just mentioned, with Washington and not even just Washington, Toronto being able to keep Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, that was key. Losing P.J. Tucker, maybe a little bit of a blow, but not too much. The Boston Celtics, as you mentioned, Jason Tatum, I loved his game at Duke. I think he's going to be a fantastic pro. So they look good, even though they have to unload either Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, or even Avery Bradley. They've already got rid of Kelly Olynyk, who is the star player for Game 7 against Washington Wizards in the Eastern Conference semis. They, too, again, adding Gordon Hayward once the deal is finalized, that's a big move for them. Not enough, in my opinion, Chris, to get them over the hump in the Eastern Conference, and more specifically the Cleveland Cavaliers. But all that said, a good move. And bringing back Otto Porter for Washington, you have to keep your core guys together. And if Beal, Wall, and Porter are your core guys, then you find a way. And with the extension that they offer John Wall, he's an all-star. He's a perennial all-star. So they have to reward their franchise player, and that's the way they want to show their way in doing just that. And the Charlotte Hornets got better by adding Dwight Howard and drafting Malik Monk, who fell to number 11. The Atlanta Hawks, the Chicago Bulls, and Indiana Pacers, losing their best players, now take a step back. So that could possibly mean the 76ers make a move up in the Eastern Conference standings. Now, the Knicks losing Phil Jackson, it's a plus. Steve Mills is still there. The owner, James Dolan, still there, probably getting in the way. So that's also good for the rest of the NBA. But the Eastern Conference has weakened a lot, Chris, with the moves of Paul George, Jimmy Butler, also Paul Millsap heading west. Things are opening up a little bit, and that can only mean good things for the Philadelphia 76ers. So I expect them, Chris, to at least fight for a 7-8 spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Devon, it's fun to talk NBA basketball again, especially for Delaware Valley fans. Thanks so much for your insights and for joining us tonight.
Chris, thank you so much. Enjoyed it.
All right, our pleasure. Devon Givens, make sure you check out his show, weeknights, 97.5 The Fanatic and 97.5thefanatic.com. Time for the RCN Sports Talk trivia question. It does involve the NBA draft. Who did the 76ers select with the last pick in the 1983 NBA draft? Not the first. We're going to really test your NBA basketball skills here. Who did the Philadelphia 76ers select with the last pick in the 1983 NBA draft? It was memorable, but not necessarily for the reasons you might think. And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
All right, and that question once again, who did the Philadelphia 76ers select with the last pick in the 1983 NBA draft? All right, let's welcome in our special in-studio guests, Randy Atiyah, the director of the Allentown Throwdown basketball tournament, assistant director Tom Moser of the Allentown Throwdown, and of course, co-host of the program, senior sports writer of The Morning Call, Mr. Keith Groller. Gentlemen, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And
happy post-Independence Day.
A little strange to be back inside. It was such a good gig out there last
night.
I really enjoyed it. I could get away from you, go to the back of the patio, hang out with girls. The sun was shining. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy how you kept saying you're hanging out with girls the whole show. But, We didn't call the police, so that was good. Don't well, call you. And you stalk them on Facebook. And
whether they're 5, 15,
be
35, or 55.
Just digging this hole, digging the hole.
It's better hanging out with you.
Well, let's quickly go now.
What's our topic here?
To Randy and Tom here to talk some summer basketball. Let's move quickly along here. With some things, Keith has to be politically correct on, but I can say it. You guys have the best summer basketball tournament of anyone in the Lehigh Valley, bar none.
Thank you.
Allentown Throwdown about 10 days away from, or a little less now, as we're broadcasting live tonight. But Randy and Tom, are you excited? I know you're very busy this time of year getting ready for this year's event.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually just at the grocery store with my wife, and she's asking me what kind of fruits we should get, and I'm listing vegetables. So it's like my mind is just totally away from everything besides the Throwdown right now. It's just totally locked in, you know, trying to get things prepared and ready to go.
Yep. I'll have a new perspective on it this year. I've been down there probably coaching in it for the first 5-6 years of it, mm-hmm. and then the last two as a college coach going down there to recruit. So I've had experience running events, and I know how taxing they are on the people that run them. So, being on this side of it this year, there's a lot more to do, but, you know, the payoff is more than worth it when you get down to it.
Yeah. And I think this summer basketball season is very interesting because we had so many great talents from last year's that graduated: Talik Williams, the mm-hmm. Cackle-Reese brothers, mm-hmm. Lance Singh, King from Freedom, I thought was very underrated. And a lot of coaches are looking for players to step up, to fill those shoes. They're looking for chemistry. We have right. Jahan Dodson coming back, which is great for Nazareth. So there's a lot of great storylines to follow. But what are some of the storylines you think that will be most interesting for this year's Allentown Throwdown?
I think it's great that you mentioned Jahan being back. Last time he actually played in the tournament, he was the MVP, and Nazareth actually won the tournament
right.
that year.
Yeah.
So I think
right.
he was going to his 11th grade year. He was a rising junior at that time. So definitely it's going to be interesting to see some of the guys that are coming back for next year, and, you know, it should be fun. Definitely.
Well, it's always
fun.
Great to talk about the local teams, but uh-huh. I think a lot of people come down and want to zoom into this tournament because they want to see some right. non-area teams. They want to see – now, we had a tournament end a couple of weeks ago that had
right.
two non-area teams in it,
sure.
and Archbishop Carroll wins it. Who do you got? Who are some of the stud teams coming in from outside the year that people can look forward to?
I mean, I think when I look at two of the staples for our tournament that have been coming down every year for us out of town is Constitution and Reading. Reading coming off a state title. Obviously, Lonnie Walker is not going to be around, but you know, they're always building. You know, from their 9th grade, 10th grade kids that are coming up, they're always, you know, prepared and ready to play. You know, they do a great job with them over there. Rick does a great job with Reading. Constitution comes down with Rob Moore, and he always has some kids that are ready to play. I mean, they're just two programs that have always come down for our tournament. And as a director, it's kind of a proud feeling when you think about all the things that are going on in the summertime with AAU and different things going on like that, and they still decide that they want to come down for our tournament. So it's always, you know, pretty cool to have those two teams down here.
Well, what people like about your tournament is that everybody knows the schedule.
Right.
We know the schedule for Thursday sure. night, Friday night, Saturday night. It's not going to change. Sunday, it's going to be fun. I mean,
right.
it's single elimination
right.
on Sunday. And that's one of the benefits. And you guys really, from day one, mm-hmm. you wanted to go with the pool play, and it's worked out very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we talk about teams that are traveling. You know, we have teams from New York and Jersey, mm-hmm. Philadelphia. Pretty much all over the state of Pennsylvania, teams are coming for our tournament. So it is nice to be able to offer that to them, to be able to have their schedule laid out for them. You know, families are traveling along with teams, so they always appreciate that and enjoy that as well.
I think one thing you said, Keith, is with the schedule, teams not only know when they're playing, but the Sports Fest crew, they do a great job of staggering the games on Saturday. You're going to play two games on Saturday, but they're only 3 hours apart. So you can come and you can make a day of it, whether it's in the morning or maybe the later afternoon segment. Mm-hmm. And then by that point, you pretty much know if you're coming back on Sunday or not. Right. And if you're not, and you can go home. If you're coming back, the out-of-towners might stay around. But I think it's just, you know, better you're playing two games within a three-hour span, and then you're done for the day. I think that's helpful.
And you take the time to plan and mix in Lehigh Valley teams and non-Lehigh Valley teams. There's other tournaments that will go
sure.
a couple hours without a Lehigh Valley team. And, you know, so it's great if you're looking for out-of-towners, right. but if you're a Lehigh Valley basketball fan, you're looking to see the local teams, you go 2 or 3 hours, you're going to lose interest.
Yeah, when you have 12 pools, so it's right. easy to spread it out. I know we have the LVC now with the 6 mountain teams, but our old EPC with the 12 teams, it was easy to just put one of those local teams in each of the 12 pools, and you're guaranteed to have a local team pretty much playing, right. if not two, at every hour during mm-hmm. the day. So,
and one of the highlights has become I mean, I can't enjoy it because I'm usually on deadline at the time. But Saturday night, you know, people gather around, and you guys were the first ones to come up with something like this locally. The right. slam dunk, the three-point and the slam dunk competition, which really gets everybody revved out. Now, I know it was rained out a few years ago, but that was a bummer. Because just when they were ready to get it going, the big-time sure. storm blew in there, but everybody scattered. But it really has become, yeah. I think, one of the best moments of the weekend, yeah. normally.
Just thinking back to last year, I mean, for me, that might have been one of the greatest, you know, summer basketball moments. You had David Cackleries, you had Talik Williams going back and forth, exchanging dunks, and the crowd. And it was right before the championship game, actually. Last year, we moved it to Sunday. Right, because some of the guys were gone, and we waited for them to come back. I mean, to try to have Talik, you know, be a part of it and David be a part of it. We waited a day on it. But that was pretty awesome. I still remember Doug calling me that night, because he's at home watching it on in his living room, and he's watching Talik set up like a barricade that he's getting done over.
He's like petrified. He's really scared.
The year before that, we had a gentleman from Freedom jump over a car. So we've had some obstacles out there during the slam dunk contest.
So who knows what's going to happen.
Insurance rates have gone up over the years.
And while you got the boys going on, you have a good girl, and you guys kind of work together now, and you got a girls tournament going on. You have a JV tournament. And I think the great thing about it, and people ask me all the time, why do you get such good crowds at Cedar Beach, and maybe in the wintertime you're only going to get maybe 500 for a game at Rockne Hall, or maybe 600 for a game at Freedom or whatever, and why we get generally, there's thousands of people roaming around those grounds out there. I think it's because you can go. You can watch maybe your daughter play here, your son play over here, maybe your younger son play in another game. I mean, it's really a neat concept the way it's lined up, and fans can really get a good look at the boys, they can get a good look at the girls, and even the rising stars coming up in the JV ranks.
Yeah, and I think the girls tournament this year is at 32, which is the largest tournament they've had, you know, since I've been a part of it, or since I can remember. They've never really had 32 teams, so for them that's an accomplishment. Jess has done a great job with that.
Becca's going to be there. By the way, a couple people talked to me about it, and they said, Becca has all these tournaments. They're flying around the country, going to Atlanta and out west.
They will be
Jose Medina, we talked to him last week, and he said he's going to be there. Yep. I don't know if that's good or bad. It's going to be fun to watch them, but they are such a great team. I guess they got to be heavy favorites on the girls' side.
For sure. Yeah, definitely, yeah. I know Jess is excited about having them be a part of it because, like you said, there was some question as to whether or not they were going to be around, but they are.
So. I wanted to ask Tommy because I know his value, and then you too.
Yep,
but you're a little partial because you're connected with the Canaries. What do we see with Allen losing those two unbelievable stars and more talent, with Park losing an Ioria, with Whitehall losing everybody, with the Cackleries twins?
Whitehall looked good, actually, the last couple of weeks.
They beat three bad teams in that other tournament. But anyway, who do we see as maybe? Is it Becca? Is it Central on the boys' side?
Becca and Central probably have the most returning talent. Yeah. Don't discount Emmaus. They have the two horses inside, Artis and Sable. Those two guys look pretty good. Right. I know Randy here can attest to it because they beat Allen twice.
Right.
But those guys are pretty good. And Chris mentioned it before. This is a time for coaches to see who's going to step up and play, because some of these kids that are rising juniors now, your body's not fully developed, and you got older guys ahead of you. And it's I'll never forget. I don't know if Randy was at Allen at the time, but before his junior year, nobody knew who Jalen Cannon was. And we played him in a tournament down here when I was at Freedom, and I'm like, who is this guy? And then 2 years later, he's a Division I player. So guys will develop later than, not everybody's an early bloomer like a Darren Hilliard or a Muhammad Ali Abdulrahman. Not everybody's going to be a four-year stud. Mm-hmm. Some guys take longer to develop, and coaches love to see when guys step up as a newbie, and you know, they'll be a surprise. But I would think, like you said, Becca, Central, and Emmaus are probably the top three right now.
But I'm looking for teams to maybe make a push upward. This is the year that if a Northampton is going to make the league tournament, this is a Northampton year.
Because
Nazareth, for example.
Chris mentioned about King being underrated last year. Freedom had a really good team last year. They were really good. And if you would put Freedom's roster now with them this year, they'd be among the favorites.
They might be the pick to win.
There were just so many talented teams last year that they just couldn't crack that top four. And so if you have a team this year that's cohesive, they buy into their coach, and they're all in, I think anybody could, you know, like you said, Northampton take a Nazareth or Deerhoff, anybody.
Yeah, we were talking about Deerhoff the other day. I know you like that being a Husky, but we talked about Deerhoff You know, I got to see them last weekend when they were playing the other tournament.
And they've just let everyone back.
Yeah, they might have one of the better. I mean, we talked about Mace's big guys inside, but Dierf might be the next best team as far as their front line. I mean, they have some really nice pieces.
Chico White.
Yeah, I mean, Chico, they got CJ Richardson. I mean, they have some really tough kids inside. So, you know, they're another team that.
The story with Dierf is, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything here. You know, can they stay intact? Can they stay eligible? Can they stay out of trouble? Joe Giargiuse has set some great parameters.
Right.
I think he's got those kids on board. I think he's got them buying in, as the phrase is right now. It's going to be a matter
a
now. What we see in July, will we see that in January?
For sure.
Yeah, and when I say coming back, those guys are back, which there was rumors floating around at the end of the last basketball season.
Of course.
But CJ and Chico, I spent a couple minutes with them last tournament, too.
Right.
They're very excited, and they want to prove people wrong. They want to prove that Dierf is a strong team. So that's certainly one of the teams I'm looking forward to watching next week at the Allentown Throwdown. Our special in-studio guests, Randy Atiyah and Tom Moser. We're going to be continuing the summer basketball talk in just a little bit. But right now, Keith takes over the spotlight. It's time for Grolier's Grumblings, where Keith sounds off and talks about anything on his sports mind.
Well, it's ironic that we just mentioned Dierf before we get into this segment. And I left the East Side in 1981 for college and then eventual marriage. And yet, even though you leave the East Side, the East Side still stays a part of you. And I was very disturbed when I learned earlier this week that they took three of the four rims on the two basketball courts at Andre Reed Park, Irving Street Park, for old-timers like me. They took those rims down. No notice, no warning. They came over, boom, they were gone. And the park had been making a comeback. Joe Giargiuse, who we just mentioned, had done an excellent job building a freshman league that seemed to be attracting a lot of interest. It brought people back, not only people from Allentown, but people from Emmaus and Parkland and Whitehall back to Irving Street to see good basketball. When I was a kid, Irving Street had it all. It had tennis, it had festivals, it had good basketball, it had baseball games almost every night. And so they were trying to do something positive on the East Side and get some leagues there. I know there were some youth leagues. And then all of a sudden, these rims were taken down. Evidently, Mayor Pulaski got a couple complaints. He reacted to those complaints. Boom, the rims were taken down. Now, I wish he would have waited to have a meeting first and then take the rims down, but there was going to be a meeting, I believe, at Dierf High School in the cafeteria Tuesday night. Hopefully, cooler heads can prevail, the rims can go back up, and the problems about noise and parking or whatever caused this problem can be rectified. But when I first heard this news, it was like the same old East Side kind of getting screwed again, and I'm telling you, I didn't like it, and I hope it can be rectified very, very soon. It's Tuesday night's meeting. Thank you.
All right. Time for tonight's Sports Talk Timeout feature. And the Phillies fell to the Pirates last night, but Daniel Nava continues to hit the ball well, with manager Pete McCannon indicating the need to find him more at-bats. Nava talked about his solid hitting at the top of the Phillies lineup and also about all the trade rumors that he has been recently involved in.
Lead off is something I am comfortable with, just because I'm not out there trying to hit the ball over the moon. So it's along with my game, but I've hit in numerous spots before, but I am pretty comfortable in that top of the lineup area. I'm just trying to really keep it simple. I know that sounds corny, but sometimes we get in our own way and do some mechanical stuff, and it's allowed me just to, I think, let the ball travel a little longer and have my hands in a good position. So, you know, you're not going to get hit every time, but as long as I can put myself in a position and a little better one than I was before, I'm happy with that. I've been in just situations where you don't know what's going to happen, whether it's this or such as spring training, making the team. Those things are so far outside of my control that the more that I think on those things, the worse it is for me. So I know that that's something that I can't control. What I can control is coming to the yard, preparing myself to play, and then going out there and doing the things that I just said, trying to put together good at-bats and put myself in a good position. I know that's something that's cliche, but you got to be able to control the things you can, and those are things I can't control. I mean, I've had my back against the wall for years in terms of just trying to make teams. The journey I've taken, this is not something I'm not it's not foreign on me. I've been here many times before, and so I guess there's a positive silver lining that since I have been in this position, I've been trying to scratch it off for every day I have, every day I can put a jersey on. It's not something that really freaks me out, but in the same regard, I mean, I think anybody would be lying to say that that's something they want every single day to be like I'd love to know that I'm going to be set and know where I'm going to be set, but that's just not how things are. So at least I've experienced it before, you know.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special in-studio guests, Tom Moser and Randy Atiyah, the Allentown Throwdown, coming up next weekend at Cedar Beach. Make sure you check that out. Still have that trivia question out there. It is a tough one, admittedly. Who was the last selection in the 1983 NBA draft selected by the 76ers? Keith, were you covering the team around that time?
I picked them up the year, the next
the year. Following year.
The 83-84 season.
So you knew this question, though, right?
Yeah.
People aren't going to get it.
No.
All right. We're talking summer basketball, and I want to get back to the Lehigh Valley teams that are playing, too, but there's a couple very special out-of-the-area teams you wanted to mention, too, from another country, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, the organization's Athletes for Better Education, they usually bring down a team. Typically, it's made up of a lot of guys from France. They also do have some kids from other countries out in Europe, but again, they're bringing two teams down this year. The last couple of years, they brought down one team. In fact, last year, I think we had a moment of silence for them. There was the act of terrorism. Yeah, the tragedy.
While the tournament was going on. Right,
exactly. While the tournament was going on, we held a moment of silence for them. They're just really good people. Every time they come down, they treat us well, and we try to take care of them. So they'll be coming down. We're excited for that.
As far as the local team, did you want to say?
I was going to say another great thing about Sports Fest, you have coaches that become attached to the tournament. Mm-hmm. For example, Jason Harrigan.
Right.
He's formerly from Del Valle Charter. They've been a big player in the mm-hmm. smaller school division the last few years throughout the state. They're actually closing, so he moved to Cardinal O'Hara. He comes back with his Cardinal O'Hara team now. So people like the way they get treated as out-of-towners, and they mm-hmm. want to come back and be a part of it, which is, you know, a testament to the guys running the show.
Yeah. Another facet about, well, the whole summer really, is the number of new head coaches we have that are breaking in. I mean, we as we speak right now, we don't know who the new Stroudsburg coach is officially going to be, right, Tom?
Correct.
I mean, Pocono West, we knew it was a done deal. Mm-hmm. Williams comes in after mm-hmm. Brad Pencil departs. Lee Heighton, they took care of it. They have Jeff Miller's son there.
Yeah. East Stroudsburg North.
Right.
Coach DeJesus mm-hmm. left to go to Blair
Academy.
But
they haven't hired a new person yet, no. I don't think so.
They'll be coming down, though.
So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these new coaches. Jerry Lloyd, is he back in this one? Jerry Lloyd was in the other tournament.
Keyberg actually sent their JV team down. Okay. So they are become part of their – I think their girls are coming
down.
But
that's part of the deal, too, to see how these new faces and new places,
for sure.
things works out. And I'm really looking forward to this one because – the rain, it just was weird. I mean, the timing was weird because we're so used to this back-to-back
right.
July setup.
Yeah.
I'm actually refreshed. I mean, normally when I get to your term, I'm like,
exhausted.
Four more nights at Cedar Beach.
It means you can hang out a little later now, right?
Yeah.
So what's wrong with Cedar Beach? Wait a minute. What's wrong with the west side of Allentown now?
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm just saying, if I'm going to spend 9 out of 12 days at a beach, it's not going to be Cedar Beach.
It's going to be in Ocean City or Myrtle Beach.
You better believe it. Right. But anyway, I'm refreshed. I think the basketball community is like, okay, we had that one. Let's see more.
Right.
Because we didn't have a local champion mm-hmm. in that first one. I think the basketball community is like, let's see what Allen can really do. Let's see Emmaus. Let's mm-hmm. see Central Catholic, which Central Catholic was undefeated in the league before those two. Right. They had two close losses. I still think Central Catholic is going to be the team to beat this winter. Kelman is special, in my opinion.
Yeah, he definitely has come a long way from, you know, what I've seen from him last year in the wintertime as to now in the summertime. He's definitely come a long way. So Central will be tough. I do like the balance, though. Like you said, we've had programs like Parkland, Emmaus, Allen, some of the heavy hitters the last couple years, and now seeing, like you said, some of these other schools coming up, the Deer Hoofs, Northampton, Nazareth. It'll be really cool to see, you know, the balance between the two groups.
Do we have any idea, though? And then one of the reasons why the other tournament did jump over, even though it changed names, there was a reason, and that was to avoid the AAU live period, of the NCAA live mm-hmm. recruiting period. Mm-hmm. You're running smack into this right now, right? So,
right.
I mean, do we have any idea how many guys are going to be missing?
Depending on, it'll be parts of the weekend. I mean, some teams will be missing you know, certain guys some days.
Entire
just, yeah, it just kind of depends. Yeah. Some guys will be there for Thursday, Friday games, won't be there for the Saturday games. It just depends. I mean, everybody's.
I think you'll see a lot of players there for the Thursday, Friday game. Mm-hmm. I think, like Randy said, Saturday might be a wash, but I think they'll be back on Sunday, depending on, you know, what happens with
where they're playing
and what time their team is playing. So, you know, the kids like to come back here and play in it. I mean, that's why the tournament, that's why two tournaments have existed for so long, because it's a neat thing to be down there and around, and the kids like it.
Right.
So they're gonna, they want to play in front of the crowds outside. You don't get that a whole lot.
Well, I would, and I know, look, if you're going to be recruited the way Talik and Tyrese and the Kakaris boys were last year, you got to go. But you're never going to get that chance to play. I know guys come down 5, 10, 15 years after they play in Sports Fest, and they're like, man, I'd love to I'd love to get out there again. So my advice to them is, I know you get to take care of yourself first, but, you know, if you can at all be there, because especially if you're a senior, you're not going to get it back again.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have to still look out for themselves as far as their recruitment. Like, when Tyrese and Talik were playing for us, there was never a time where we said, you know, you guys really should stay here. If anything, there was times where they wanted to stay, you know, because they wanted to play in front of their friends and their neighborhood. But, you know, I do think it's important to have a little bit of a balance between the AAU and the high school team and that relationship. But
and you got a chance to play some other players that might not see a whole lot of court time with them there.
I do have to ask you, I mean, we've talked a lot about a lot of different teams. This team of the year still, in my opinion, even though a little disappointing, I got to say, at the end, but how the Allen Canaries shaping up?
We're going to be young. We're going to be young, but we definitely, I mean, some people saw us last weekend with the other tournament. We had a pretty good weekend. We have a lot of kids that are hungry to, and have, you know, something to prove. A lot of guys that were, you know, last year after games that were just, man, they really wanted to get in some of these big games and play some minutes, but the minutes weren't there. I mean, we had a really strong group of seniors there. So some of the juniors and even sophomores just didn't get to play last year. So they definitely have something to prove. And I think we'll surprise some people. And it's nice not having that target on us this year and a little bit of pressure off, but we'll be around.
Mm-hmm. You obviously will be. Right. Doug Snyder is the best in the business, and he had a great coaching staff. You part and parcel of that staff, so I expect the Canaries to be right there.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because I remember Doug a few years ago saying that when it's summer league, he likes to stay away. He likes to be hands-off. He says the kids are tired of me yelling at him. He wants to give other people a chance to yell at him, too. Does he really stay away, though? Because he's always in the shadows or under the trees there watching everything pretty closely.
Well, I think what Doug means a lot of times is he just kind of lets them go out and play a little bit. You know, most of the coaching is done. You know, when kids are coming off and they're sitting on the bench, he'll take a knee and talk with them and spend some time with them as, you know, his assistants are coaching on the court as well. But definitely he allows our kids to just get out and play and have some fun in the summertime. I mean, they play so much. He takes them all year round. So I think he does give them a little bit of a break from him and his voice during the summertime sometimes.
And it's funny how coaches coach in the summer league, too, because I the other day I saw Freedom playing zone. Some coaches won't even touch the zone. They're like, you know, defense, we'll back off a little bit or play whatever you want. But there's other coaches who will work on some things like that or mix in and play things they won't play in the winter.
Well,
play that way in the summer.
And that's the coaches trying to adapt to what they have on their roster now. They're breaking in some new guys, and they want to see what the guys can do. And if you might want to give zone a shot during the winter, but if it doesn't look any good in the summer, you know, maybe you want to try it out, and they're trying to see what they have on their roster too. So it's a learning time for the coaches too. Actually, they're trying to figure out what parts can fit together and, you know, when they look their best. So
just want to finish up the little Doug Snyder deal here. Doug had spent what, 2 weeks away from the kids. He went to the NBA prospect camp in Virginia, which he's done for
he
years.
Goes, yeah.
Yeah, he's been doing
and
that years.
Shows that's a testimony to how valued he is. But he told me, because he caught me by surprise. You guys played, remember the rain out night, and you guys were at Allen, and I thought, well, he won a game. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to go down right away to the locker room. He says, "Do you want something?" I said, "Yeah, I want to talk to you." So you're going to have to wait. It's going to be a long meeting. I haven't seen these guys for 2 weeks, and I have some things I need to say. And so, okay, coach. It just caught me by surprise because he was hands-on.
Yeah.
Make no mistake, even when he's away, he knows what's going on. And he had a message or two, as you know, to deliver that night in the bowels of Seward's gym in the middle of June.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's always working with those guys. And I think part of the message that night was just for some of the, you know, the rising seniors now, letting them know that this is your team. And it was mostly a talk about leadership. I think some of the guys from last year that are coming back might not be used to that leadership role, but they're going to have to get used to it pretty quick, because last year they didn't play a lot of minutes, but now it's their team, and Doug made it very clear to them that they need to start taking some leadership out there.
We haven't talked too much about the Colonial League. Banger looked good. I mean, you think
Carthage they ever win in that tournament?
Absolutely. Well, had a good showing in the summer. They've been pretty good in the summer league too.
Obviously, it goes without saying, but Bron, Holland does as good a job as anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just when he first got there, that program was in real bad shape, and he went from just having a couple players here and there to now he just reloads with guys, and they're just as good as it gets in that league. Notre Dame is a very talented player. There's some other programs. Salisbury's been very consistent with Coach Weaver. So, Banger had a good showing, and I'm sure that they're going to be back expecting to play on Sunday, I would say, at the
very
least.
That's another story, though, and I don't want to bring up names. Let's see if those guys that are on the team now will
they
be
are.
There.
That's a good sign.
Will be there. I hope they're there. Mm-hmm. If they're there,
right.
Banger's
going to
be able to
talk to anybody in the league, in the EPC. I mean,
and certainly in the in the 5A? I mean, they're going to be tough in 5A.
And they can run and gun, too. So I think they could play with some of those EPC teams, no question, certainly in the 5A. Mm-hmm. All right, 1 minute left in this segment, which is good, because I wanted to ask one other question. I got three smart basketball people here. I thought for sure David Kackelreese, all right, 2.5, Keith.
Okay.
He doesn't want to be included in this. David Kackelreese and Matt. They were such great ball handlers. I know they have the big guys up front. They have size, quality people. But I thought, you lose those two guards, you are going to take a step back, because you can't replace those two guys, arguably some of the best guards we've ever seen. And they look really good, in particular the backcourt players. I mean, does Steve Yoder and his coaching staff get a credit for that? Or how are they able to not miss a beat after losing two awesome ball handlers?
Here's one point to consider. Most teams at this point aren't going to crank up the pressure defensively.
That's true,
okay, let's see how it goes. I saw the same guard play that handled Allen, a couple weeks ago, and they look good.
Yeah.
And they didn't turn the ball over.
Well, that was the barometer. When they looked good against Allen, I thought, wow.
Yeah, you can do it against some other teams, but doing it against Allen is great. But let's see, and I'm not saying they won't, but the challenge will be, can they do it when the pressure is cranked up and, when the lights are on in December in a league game and, RCN's there covering the game, will they be able to handle the pressure?
Thank you for the plug. All right, we'll be back. Final segments. Randy Atiyah and Tom Moser talking Allentown Throwdown and Summer League basketball straight ahead. Final segment of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. One more time, we'll float that trivia question out there. The possibly difficult question that Keith said no one's going to get right. Who did the 76ers select with the last pick in the 1983 NBA draft? We've had some interesting guesses via the email from our viewers. We've had our cameraman Chris Zia with some ridiculously awful answers. You say Charles Barkley was semi-close, but Allen Iverson and Moses Malone was just dreadful, Chris. Come on. All right, and he's an Emmaus guy too, Keith. Come on here.
I'm not taking ownership of his skills tonight.
him and Kingsley.
Kingsley's enough to bear, on my shoulders.
Oh, he has some special things planned for you in the fall. All right, Randy Atiyah, Tom Moser, Allentown, A-Town Throwdown directors. People from Allentown call it A-Town, but people from out of town may.
Rolls off the tongue.
The first Allentown throwdown.
No,
rolls
off the tongue. Anderson, I think you got to give him credit for that.
Oh, Toon deserves total.
I mean, that is
the guy who come up with
he likes slogans. Toon likes slogans.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Toon's devastated by that he can't be here for the show. I'm sure.
Yeah,
he's on vacation.
On vacation. So
he was on in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Yep. As far as running down, just recapping, boys teams and girls teams, we talked about Becca's going to be there. Who are some of the other teams that are going to be there? Or is it easier to say who's not going to be there as far as the Lehigh Valley teams?
Lehigh Valley teams, honestly, we pretty much have it covered. Yeah, I can't even think of a team. Yeah, Easton's there. I can't think of a team that's not, not there.
How about Colonial League? You might have a couple
Colonial League.
People.
Northern Lehigh's not there.
Okay.
We have Bangor. We have Northwestern's there. Palmerton's in. Yeah,
I know Penn Argyle said they came up a couple guys short, so I think Penn Argyle's out, but Salkin's in.
Salkin's in.
Just watch Kenny Termini coach. That's just a treat.
He's an official as well.
I know.
At the same time?
He reffed one of my JV games in the last tournament.
Yeah, I know. He's amazing. Well, he felt like if his team was involved, I talked to him.
Yeah.
It'd be inappropriate to be an official and a coach in the same tournament. So.
Right.
But it's good to have him coaching. He'd probably be a better coach than an official.
Pretty cool.
So the games start next Thursday.
Correct.
What time's the first game?
First game will tip off at 5.
5 o'clock.
Yeah, 5 o'clock. Last game will tip off at 9.
All right. Now, could you pause the action at 7 o'clock so Keith can get here, do the show, and then go back?
Just play
music for an hour and a half out at Cedar Beach.
Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to see the 5 o'clock game.
We'll have a nice seat ready for him when he gets
there. He's going to have to sacrifice one or two game sets.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other question I was going to ask you. As far as underdogs, who is one of the – aside from the big names, not Becker or Central –
North,
who's a team under the radar?
Donnie Ross, CD East. Keith, you know Donnie Ross, former assistant.
Freddie's son.
Yep. Yeah, former assistant at Harrisburg. He came up last year and he did a really good job and had a great time. And he's looking forward to coming back. And I think you can see CD East make it.
Yeah, we love having them come down too. And that, in fact, they had such a good time the first time they came. They now bring their boys, JVs, and girls all come down.
Yeah. Yeah. But Rob Moore always puts on the show, doesn't he? Constitution.
He sure does.
You don't know if he's going to have the team in the summer that he's going to have in the winter.
Right.
But Rob is always going to compete. He's going to work the officials.
Yep.
He's going to play to win.
He gives you his your money's
worth.
You
better believe it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And by the way, before we close, I was handed this note. RCN would like to acknowledge that they do not endorse Keith's views. They love the city of Allentown, the east side, the west side, and everything else, and anyone else that he has offended during tonight's program. Randy and Tom, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, guys.
No one cares when you offend me. Best of luck, and I hope the weather holds up for you and you have a nice weekend.
I'm sure it will, and the park will be buzzing for 4 days.
Can't wait.
It's going to be a blast.
Look forward to it.
Let's do it.
All right. Next week, we're going to be live with another edition of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. We're going to talk some Blue Mountain League baseball with Bob Varyu and Timmy Fisher, who's always has some great stories.
He's an entertaining guy.
Maybe he'll bring his harmonica again.
Let him do his Honeymooners impersonations.
Okay. And we also have Mike Jones, who is the head coach at DeMatha and was the head coach of Markel Fultz. So he'll have some interesting perspective on what Markel is really like and how he'll fit in with the Sixers process. That's next week on Sports Talk. Until next time, for Keith, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.